So I'm just going to go over the papers a little bit. It's interesting how y'all notice that we are in the blue. And one of you wrote, "I couldn't believe that I am basically solid blue." And that is actually really shocking that in the exercise yesterday, that we are a lot in the blue. If not in the blue, definitely in the yellow. So there's a reason why we have a really hard time identifying with those in poverty here in the U.S. And there's also something I saw in the paper that I partially take issue with. It's true, but it's this thing of like our goal in life is to get to heaven. Now, that is true, but I think there's more to that. The good news of the gospel is the good news of the kingdom. So Jesus came to this earth to bring the good news of the kingdom. And we are here to spread the kingdom of God on this earth. What did Jesus say? The kingdom of heaven is here. It is at hand. And we can bring a little bit of heaven to earth to people we come in contact with. And I think sometimes we have too much of this mentality that we're just get me through life. I just want to go to heaven. And we kind of miss our role here on the earth. So that's why I get a little squeamish when I hear that. Like the thing we're here for is to get to heaven. Yes, our ultimate goal is to get to heaven. But we have so much work to do here. So just wanted to clarify that. Also, something I saw, the amount of money we have or possessions we have does not change who we are. And I think if you read Jesus' teachings, where our treasure is, there will our heart be also. I believe there's people who become deceived. There seems to be this line of having too much, and it's really hard to find that. And my goal here this week is not to tell y'all where that is. Like we want to know, is it 200,000? Is it 300,000? Can I have a savings account? Can I not? And I'm not here to do that this week. I'm here to give you principles. It's something that we all have to wrestle with. It's something I have wrestled with. And so I do believe that possessions and wealth can take our heart in a wrong direction. The parable about the thorns, the cares of this life choking us out, I believe is very real. So also a clarification on that. One of you girls had given some suggestions. There were some girls from your home church that invited girls after a summer Bible school to their homes. Another suggestion, get a plastic gallon bag, fill it with hygiene products, and give that out to homeless people. So that was a good suggestion. And I also thought of something else that I should have mentioned. So Laurie is here, and she comes to our house about once a week and helps my wife with all things household, cleaning and babysitting and all that. And I was just going to tell you, young ladies, if you want to do something very, very important, you can do that for someone. And Annabella may do that too. I'm not quite sure. But if you young ladies are involved in something like that or want to do that, that's a very good work. There was a question that came in that I'd like to address, and that is, how do we balance... You're single, you can make good money. How do you balance having a savings account and saving money for the future and yet not laying up too much and all of that? And I'd like to tell you a little bit, I guess, how I've wrestled with this. I went to Bible school in 2010. And one of the Bible school teachers there gave out these little books, Through the Eye of a Needle. Have any of y'all heard of that book or read it? Okay, there. All right, so teaching unlike I have probably ever heard in my life. And I remember one particular thing in the book that he said something about he would rather have a rattlesnake in their house with his children than have a savings account. There was some shocking statement like that was in there. And like very, very much against having about anything. And so as a young person, I was you know, wrestling with this. And then about 3 years later, I went to CBS. And I went for answers. Like, I really wanted to know, What is okay? What is not? I was grappling with it. And so the whole thing of this book is the doctrine of non-accumulation. And I go to CBS, and would you know, they had a panel discussion on the doctrine of non-accumulation. And so here I was, found myself in the same situation, and there was a lot of debate going on. And of course, one thing I noticed is that it was almost always the older against the younger. The younger were saying no wealth, the older were giving kind of a defense for having things and savings account and all that. So anyway, I really bought into that, actually. I came home from Bible school, and I was very vocal about not having savings accounts. I discovered later that I actually influenced quite a bit of people, and they gave money away, and I was pretty effective in my ministry, I guess you could say. And I didn't realize till later how much of an influence I actually had. And so here I am, how many years later, and I'm probably living like the same people that I criticize. And there's something about having a family and having children and providing that gives you a little bit of a different perspective. And so what I did, I don't know how old you all are, I was probably 19 or 20, and I decided, you know what? I'm going to basically give away everything I make. I am not at Mountain View or Faith Mission or whatever, and that can be my ministry. So I did. I just gave away my money. I made money. I gave it away, and I got up to where we started dating, and at some point, I'm not sure, was it when we were engaged or after we started dating, that I actually started saving money because, you know, a house, there's a wedding, there's a lot of things you need money for. And I'll just tell you, it was pretty amazing. We found a house, a mobile home, for, it was about $48,000, I think, that we paid for. And just little things like the siding guy showing up and saying that he felt led not to charge me for labor. A relative came, put my windows in for no labor. And I feel like I was repaid multiple times for those years of giving my income away. And so, do I give all of my income away right now? No. I'm at a different stage in life. And so, I don't want to come across in these next couple of days as hypocritical, like I'm telling you to live a certain way and I don't live a certain way. These are things that I deal with a lot myself, and I've probably gone into the ditch of just kind of running from that side of not having a savings account to maybe a little bit too much on the saving, hoarding, whatever side of life. So this talk, I'll just tell you, has really been affecting me, and like, are there things I should be doing, making adjustments in my own life? I will just say, be a little bit careful how you criticize the older ones. It is perfectly fine for you to ask questions, even your mom and dad. Maybe you see some things. Just do it in a gracious way. There's nothing wrong with doing that. All right, so the goal of this lesson today is to understand the importance of small transactions, and maybe I can convince you not to buy from Starbucks. And I will just tell you that I buy from all of these places, okay? I do not go through my week and never stop anywhere to eat. I'm actually on the road a lot, depending on the season and how busy we are, and I'll just tell you, I don't like a packed lunch. I just don't like a packed lunch. I probably should. And so the company actually pays my lunch. And so that maybe feels a little justifiable there. But I definitely have needs to grow. I want to give you something, a blueprint for if you find yourself in life where the funds are not reaching. what are we going to do? And I actually, in a study period, I have a story over there of a young couple. It's made up, but it's still, I would say, a lot of truth into what people face. And I want you to look over their finances in the study period and analyze where they could cut things out. Are they living above their means, under their means, and all of that. So I will go over this and let you take care of that. All right, so theme verse here. Take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consists not in the abundance of the things which he possesses. I think we went over that yesterday very well. Okay, Luke 16, 1 and 2. And he said unto his disciples, there was a certain rich man which had a steward, and the same was accused unto him that he had wasted his goods or possessions. And he called him and said unto him, how is it that I hear this of thee? Give an account of thy stewardship, for thou mayest be no longer steward or manage. Again, a clear indication that we are stewards of what we are given. And I'd like to have a quote every day. This is one of my all-time favorite quotes on finances. We buy things we don't need with money we don't have to impress people we don't like. And we are going to be looking at the why a little bit today. Why do I buy the things that I do? It's really important to define the why. And actually, just a little secret here. We live close to Nashville, and I sometimes, you know, you want to take your visitors somewhere, or I like to go sightseeing, things like that. And one thing I enjoy doing is going to Dave Ramsey's lobby, and they have a coffee shop there, and everything is free. You get a free coffee drink, you get a free little cookie, and you can listen to the show. And so I've actually met Dave there a couple of times. And if you're ever in Nashville, it's an interesting place to visit. So just fun fact there. I'd like to look at stingy or thrifty. And just kind of in my understanding of this, we hear the term thrifty, and I think of thrifty as a good term. And someone who is willing to be tight with himself so he can give to others. I think we talked about that a little bit yesterday. And a stingy person is just stingy all around. And y'all can probably think of someone right now that comes to your mind that is a stingy person. And there's just something about the person. Maybe they go to Goodwill to buy gifts for you and give you used things. Those things do happen. And so stingy people generally are just stingy all around. They're probably tight with themselves, but also probably tight with others. So I get a little tired of this thing of, I think we use this term stewardship for selfish gain sometimes. So we don't want to help this person because if we give him money, maybe the guy beside the road or whatever, like, he wants $10. Like, well, I can't give this guy $10 because I know he's going to go buy drugs. That would be bad stewardship. And we go out and spend $15,000 on a side-by-side. Like, there's things like that that just don't make sense. We use the term stewardship, I feel like, sometimes for our own benefit. And little bit as a hand or an excuse to not give. We'll get into the giving tomorrow. Some things to analyze in our spending. Am I trying to impress someone? When I buy something, am I trying to impress other people? It's a very important question to ask. And what are my motives? Another thing to ask is, what if I find something that is a really good deal? I know I probably shouldn't do this, but it's a deal. I'll just tell you some, and I'm not here to judge if any of you have this, whatever, but I'll just say a personal decision I've made. I like driving Fords. I will not drive a platinum Ford. It's just a decision I made. I don't care how good of a deal I would find. I wouldn't drive a platinum.
What about a limited?
I would do a limited. I don't, like I said, it's just a personal thing for me. I'm not telling you where to draw lines. The important thing here is that we all have to figure out where we're at. It's not here or here or here for everyone. We're all at different places. The other thing I would not do is, I don't care if they're, again, I'm just using vehicles, it's just an example. I would not buy a vehicle with big, wide tires just for the image. I don't care how good of a deal it is on the vehicle. I wouldn't do that. And so it bothers me sometimes when we hear these terms that, well, you can tell someone feels a little bit bad for the purchase, but it was a good deal. And that is the defining factor. And that is an indication that that person's core decision-making process revolves around the dollar. And I believe a Christian has higher values than that and will spend money based on his other values of stewardship and Christian principles. I think even just image is important. And it could be different for, it could be a house. That's something I struggle with a little bit. We built a house a couple of years ago, and I would probably build it a little different if I built another house, just simply because of image. And so these are things we have to wrestle with. They're not going to be the same for everyone. And there was a quote at Bible school that had to do with, I'm going to have to pull it up. My brother can, but I can't. To judge my brother is not my lot. I'm going to find that quote, and I'll try to bring it for you. That was very helpful for me. Okay, so as we think of this thing of image and why we buy things, I don't know if y'all realize this or not, but Starbucks, when they first started selling products, they did not sell hot coffee. They sold coffee beans. They sold roasting equipment. They sold to other places. They didn't actually make coffee. And the CEO, Howard Schultz, at the time, he'd been a lot younger than he is now. You've probably seen pictures of him. And he went over to Europe, and he saw where the cafes over there, people would come in. And what we know of a coffee shop today is what he was seeing in Europe. And he said, hey, America needs that. America needs a coffee shop like that. And so what they did, what was normally a 50-cent cup of coffee at the diner, they were selling a cup of coffee for $4. Now, how in the world do you convince a population to spend $4 on a cup of coffee when you could get it for 50 cents over here? It's all bean water. How do you convince someone of that? All right, so I'm gonna give you a quote here from Financial Flash is where it's from. All right, suddenly there are people dropping a Lincoln for a cup of bean water, and they're thanking Starbucks for the privilege. How did they pull that off? Status. That white cup with the green mermaid became a fashion accessory. You weren't just drinking coffee. You were telling everyone who saw you that you had taste. You had money. You knew what a macchiato was, even if you couldn't spell it. Starbucks taught America a new language. Barista, grande, venti? Vente? You guys look confused. By 2008, Starbucks hit $10 billion in sales annually. They literally turned a cup of coffee into a status symbol. Now, that might be a little bit hard for you to believe because I don't know that it's that way anymore. I don't really think it is because there's so many different coffee shops. But I remember when it used to be, like you would go through the airport or whatever, maybe 10, 15 years ago, and you could just tell, like, when someone had their cup of Starbucks, they were saying something. Like, it was a status symbol. And I give you that as an example and just, I guess, give you a question as well. What is your status symbol? What is something that you spend money on that is a status symbol? I'd like to, I don't have slides on this because it was not even in my notes. I was sitting over there and it just kind of came to me and I decided I'm going to throw this in here about idolatry. I think that this whole thing of spending money, so you have covetousness, so you have, you spend money to feed our covetousness, and then the scripture also says that covetousness goes right with idolatry. So Ephesians 5, 5 and 6 says this, "For you may be sure of this, that everyone," this is the ESV, "that everyone who is sexually immoral or impure," very descriptive there, "or who is covetous," that is an idolater, "has no inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. Let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of these things, the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience." So very strong language about coveting. Coveting being like idolatry. Idolatry is a distraction. Idolatry challenges the sovereignty of God. There's a quote by Timothy Keller. Actually, I tell you what, it's important enough. I'm going to just quick put this up. So y'all can write it down. "If anything becomes more fundamental than God to your happiness, meaning in life, and identity, then that is an idol." Timothy Keller. I know there's probably going to be people listening to this later on, and we do have slides up here, so that might be a little confusing for you. All right, here we go. Hopefully my spelling is correct. "If anything becomes more fundamental than God to your happiness, meaning in life, and identity, then it is an idol." Another quote here by Tim Keller, "An idol is anything more important to you than God. Anything that absorbs your heart and imagination more than God. Anything you seek to give you what only God can give. Anything that is so central and essential to your life that should you lose it, your life would feel hardly worth living." I believe that our spending can feed our idols. I really believe that. And here's another quote, and I would have had these up there if I would have planned on doing this earlier. And if you want these quotes, let me know, and I can add them in tomorrow's slides. "You don't have to go to heathen lands today to find false gods. America is full of them. Whatever you love more than God is your idol." So I want to go over some things about idols here that were really interesting. I was at the ministers' meetings in Mendon, Ohio, and Michael Overhaul talked about idolatry, and there were just some really interesting points. Number one, we defend our idols and serve them for what they give us in return. We do this without thinking. We defend our idols and we serve them for what they give us in return. And if you look in Acts 19, there was Demetrius, a silversmith, who made silver shrines for Diana, the god, brought no small gain unto the craftsmen. right? So all of a sudden his job here, his idolatry, is in danger. And what was the response? I'm really abbreviating it here. And when they heard these sayings, they were full of wrath, cried out saying, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." So our idols, we defend. And we lash out when someone touches it. So if anyone ever, we have this term, steps on our toes, or someone comes up to you and says, "Hey, brother, whoever, I have a little bit of a concern. I think this might be an idol to you." If we lash out when someone touches that, it's an indication that it probably is an idol. What are we protecting? Idols always require something of us. There is a price that is paid. There is a sacrifice that needs to be made to keep the idolatry alive. I would just love to have an entire session on this. Another thing about idolatry is that which is good can become an idol. Martha, who was distracted by much serving, Jesus said, "Martha, Martha, 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 you are anxious and troubled about many things. But one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her." So good things can become idols as well. Idols not only don't have life, they take life away from you. Idolatry is anti-God at the core. Remember that. Idolatry is anti-God. You cannot serve an idol and feed an idol and serve God. All right. There's your bonus for the day on idolatry. I want to throw it in there. I just got to thinking about, you know, this is so important, about how in our spending habits, something can be an idol to us, and we kind of keep it alive through that. Okay, we are going to read a story here. Bob never thought much about the little things he bought each day. They were small, harmless, barely noticeable. Every morning on his way to work, he stopped by the same corner store. He'd grab a warm biscuit wrapped in foil and a cold bottle of orange juice. It was quick, convenient, and only a few dollars. He told himself it saved time, and besides, it wasn't expensive. After work, tired and hungry, Bob had another routine. He'd pull into the gas station near his neighborhood and walk out with a bag of chips and a pack of beef jerky, just a snack to hold him over until dinner. Again, only a few dollars. Days turned into weeks, weeks turned into months. One evening, Bob sat at his kitchen table, sorting through his bank statement. His brow furrowed as he noticed how often the same two store names appeared. He grabbed a calculator and started adding. Okay, where's my marker? What was he buying? Someone just tell me real quick. All right, what food? Biscuit, all right. See if I can spell better than y'all. A few of you had some interesting spelling. I'll leave it at that. I thought about putting slides up here with some of the sentences that I saw, and decided it probably wouldn't be very nice. I have horrible handwriting, so I don't have much to say. All right, what else? Jerky? And be thinking about it. We're going to value these things. What else? Chips. Is there anything else? All right, biscuit. All right, how much is a biscuit with tax? All this has to have tax. It's $3.39 down here at Jarman's. I probably shouldn't know that. All right, so that's actually cheap. I think often it's more like $4 or higher. So we'll go $4. Orange juice is really expensive. I don't know why. You can't get orange juice at a gas station for $2. $3 to $4. With tax, probably $4, yeah. I'd say. Okay. All right. How much is jerky? 12. Y'all agree? It's just his daily snack. 10. All right, let's go 10. I'm hearing all kinds of numbers here. Let's go 10. Chips. What about chips? 450. All right. This guy doesn't have a lot of self-discipline here. Okay. Can anyone give me a total real fast? What? Okay. All right, now, 2250. We need some more room here. We're going to do, okay, daily 22, I think we have some school teachers here. That's helpful. All right, what's the weekly? I actually didn't figure this up. We'll go with a five-day week. You are right, 112.50. All right, what about monthly? $450? All right. All right, yearly? $450 times 12. You're right, $5,400. I think I missed a Canada joke. Is that right? All right, so yearly, we're going to go 5 year. 5 years is, shoot, that 400 is messing me up. 5,400 times 5, 27,000. 27,000. All right, let's just run out of time here. Let's just go to the 20-year right away. Okay, so 20 years sounds like a lot of time, but when I think back of 20 years ago, it goes quite fast. So yearly we're at 5,400 times 20. All right. This habit, and this guy has probably got worse habits than this. I'm just giving a few. All right, I want you that number there to soak in a little bit right there. I don't know, ladies, can you see that? It's $108,000. $108,000 on a biscuit and beef jerky habit. Now, that sounds pretty shocking. And it's always so fun. I don't know if I told all of you or not. I used to be very involved in SALT classes here locally. And to see people who had habits just light up when they saw this kind of thing was very rewarding. There was a class that we did in Dixon, and that was me there. And if you see the older couple closest to me, they were there that day kind of as visitors. And we asked them if they'd be willing if we would add up their cigarette habit. So this couple here had a cigarette problem, and they were very willing. And so we added up just like this and discovered the thousands of dollars that they've spent on cigarettes. And the look in their eyes was just like, just pure astonishment. They couldn't believe it. And that same couple, all of a sudden they said, "We've got to go." And I was like, "Why? Like, why do y'all have to go?" "Well, we have to go pay our light bill. We have to go pay our light bill. We pay our light bill every day." They were paying like $7, $8 a day for their light bill. That's how poor they were. And so it's a lot of fun to help people try to discover the importance of small transactions. And it like the Starbucks, and it's just ridiculous anymore, where you get a, I personally like the shaken espresso if I go to a Starbucks. And it just doesn't even feel right to walk out of a Starbucks with a little drink and spend $8. There's something about it. And if we really added up some of that spending, I think we'd really be astonished at our spending. And then for Laurie and Annabella, the girl there in the pink is the cashier at Kroger, if y'all ever recognize her. All right. And then I found in my studies here, I found a sticky note with names, and beside every name, we were talking about things that we could cut out. And what we do in a SALT class is everybody takes one thing they can cut out for a month, one like habitual expenditure that you have, you cut that out for 1 month. And I didn't put the names beside there, but I will tell you mine was the breakfast biscuit. That was me. It is, I tell you, this gas station down here, Jarman's, has the best biscuits. If your hosts ever give you a bad breakfast, I don't think they will, but that could be an option for you. But it's something how gas station biscuits can be quite good. So that was mine. Okay, what do we do about this? So one thing we would also teach is this thing of budgeting. And I don't know what comes to your mind when you think of budgeting, but it's a very simple concept. It's basically you zoom out and do a 30,000 view on your finances to see where you're at. And you may not think it's necessary now. And if you would have asked me at your age, I would have said it's not necessary either. But my goal for this class is to equip you for the next 5 to 10 years. Okay? You might not need this now, but you will need this after you get married. And that might not be just too long for some of you. I don't know. Once you spend $300,000 on a piece of property, you get bills coming in, the money's not reaching, it can be very difficult. All right, so why budget? I was afraid of that. All right, number one, it puts you in a very intentional headspace. And when you're budgeting and you're tracking your expenses, you think twice when you see Starbucks. I do this all the time. When my wife and I finally sit down and say, okay, we've got to tighten up. And then I'm in town, I'm intentional. I say, you know, I can pass that. I'll get a coffee drink when I get home. And we have an espresso machine at home, and that does help to avoid some of these places too. All right. Another one, it shows you when you are wasting in a certain category that you are doing fine in. Often we don't think it's bad until we look at our credit card statement and we really analyze it and we say, wait a second, I spent $200 on eating out. Now that would be high for you all, but I tell you, with a family, if we go to Chick-fil-A, we're spending 50 bucks. That's just how it is. If we go to a steakhouse, it's gonna be 60 to 70. So it's very different. We used to get one kid's meal for all of our children, and now we're buying three, and it adds up. It develops self-control. You realize whether or not you have a spending or income problem. We'll get into that a little bit later. It's you controlling your money instead of it controlling you. This is very, very important that you are now in control. There's a lot of people where their money is their situation is controlling them. Their money is controlling them. They are out of control. And budgeting gives you a sense of control with your money. It helps you achieve goals. It gives you motivation. There's actually, it's interesting. I've heard this through Dave Ramsey's podcast, I think it is, where if someone decides they're going to pay off debt, their income goes up. Why is that? Because they're more intentional, and it gives more motivation, and you're going to do more to get that done. I went over that. It looks like I duplicated that a little bit. And then here we have an outflow or inflow problem. So there are times when someone has a problem of not enough of an income. I would say most times it's not going to be this. Most times it's going to be a hole in the bucket. There's a hole in the bucket, there's a leak, there's water going into the bucket, but somewhere it's leaving. That's often the case. So it is a little difficult sometimes. We're going to go a little bit over time here. It is difficult sometimes when you know someone really has an income problem. Should they get another job? Should they get the second job? Should they go door dashing? I have a brother who's gone door dashing just to make extra money for traveling. So there's things like that that you can do. All right, so on a budget, what you want to do is figure out all your income as close as possible per month, what your income is. So you have your predictable income, which is like, let's say you're on a salary or you get paid per hour. There's probably an average that you get paid per month. And then you pay taxes on that. And so what you want to do is take your predictable income, your normal income, and then you want to minus the taxes that you pay on that. You can go online anywhere and figure out which bracket you're in, minus that tax, and that is your total income. And then you have the variable income. I used to have sheep, and I would sell some sheep throughout the year. Might have been $500 that I made. So take the variable income for you ladies, maybe it's a side cleaning job or something, and then take the tax out of that, and that's your variable income. So get your total income is where we need to start. And here's just an example of a budget form where you have your income there on the top. Yeah, you can see it a little bit. And then your categories, your amounts, and I'm going to blow it up a little bit. So they're in the fixed income. Let's just say someone makes $2,500 and as a side hustle they make $500. Total income, $3,000. So we've got that figured out. And then here's the categories. So in this one, it's like total for the month. So they figured out $750 for rent, $200 utilities, and at the end of the month, you need to figure out, did you stay in your budget? So like you take utilities as an example, $200 was figured. You only spent $175, so you actually had $25 left. And if you go down there to the groceries and restaurants, it actually was in the negative. So you spent more than you allocated. And it'll take you a little bit of time to figure out where you're at. When we first, I don't know, we married a year. We first started budgeting, probably not even that long. And it took us a month or two to figure out, okay, what are groceries? And so groceries for you is going to be completely different than our family. And so it's hard to say this amount for groceries. You're just going to have to figure that out. And then this is where the real magic happens. You take your total income, you take all your expenses out, including your tithing, including your giving, and taxes and everything, which that, I guess that would have come out of your income. And then you have a difference of $185. So in the case of this example, these people have $185 left after the end of the month. And what's really scary is when that's negative. And there's people that run on that. And the way that they compensate for that, instead of trying to fill the hole for the bucket, they go with the credit card and they have credit card debt. And the credit card debt adds up and they find themselves in a real jam. I actually know a situation at a church that happened a number of years ago, similar to our church here, and it caused a real problem. He had all kinds of credit card debt that he racked up, and the children had to go out and work. He got offended because people were trying to help him and tell him what to do. So don't wait until you get yourself in that situation. I'm trying to figure out what I should cut out here. There are some misconceptions about budgeting. I'm good with money. Budgeting is only for those who have financial problems. It's a complicated system. I don't know anything about. Takes too much time. Don't have time to manage it. If you would have asked me at your age about budgeting, you know what I would have told you? I would have probably told you that budgeting is for those who don't know how to manage their money. And I would say the opposite right now. Budgeting is for those who know how to manage their money. Or it can help you to know how to manage your money. There's different types of budgeting. There's the envelope system, where you have an envelope for eating out. You have an envelope for groceries. You have an envelope for everything. And so you go to town, and when you're at Dollar General, you get your grocery envelope out, and you get the cash out of that. There is also spreadsheets. There are online programs. I have used Quicken, which is not QuickBooks. It's a different program. I personally like a computer. I'm very comfortable on a computer. I don't like doing things on my phone. Some people like apps. And Every Dollar app, highly recommend if you want to use an app. QuickBooks also has one called Mint that is also very nice. I don't know that it's as user-friendly as Every Dollar. There is a ton of resources out there for budgeting. So, when does study period end?
Quarter after.
Okay, so we have some time here. Some things here that I missed. As far as the other thing I had on here is banking. Be very clear on your bank accounts. You need a checking account. You need a savings account. I'm going to get into this tomorrow. You need a giving account. You need a charity account. And we actually have a travel account. We've got a bunch of accounts. That doesn't mean we have a bunch of money. We have a bunch of accounts. Okay. It's very easy to get a checking account set up, and it just keeps things more organized. We love to, like, if there's extra stuff, like when I was at the store, I would do things on the side, make a little extra money. We'd throw it into travel. And then when we went to visit my brother-in-law and his family in Romania, guess what? We have money in the travel account that we can go do that with. So highly recommend that. Having some good clarity there.
Emergency fund?
I don't have a specific emergency fund. Yeah. I just move stuff around. Be sure that you keep money in your checking account, and balancing your checkbook is very simple as to what I just said. You got to figure out, make sure there's no checks out there that haven't cleared the bank, that haven't been pulled. You can very easily get a $32 fee for not having sufficient funds, and that's not fun when that happens. The other thing to keep in mind on this should have went a little bit more with my spending. Be aware of advertisers and what they're trying to do to you. They're trying to make you very discontent. And they are going to try to manipulate you into buying their product. And there's a lot of psychological things that go into buying. And there was one time we were selling this product at the store, and we had different size bottles of this product. And the smallest one was, I think, $17. And the next one was like $40. And I wanted to sell the $40 one. So what did I do? I made the $17 one really small. Like, I just put a few of those. And I really widened up the $40 bottles. Guess what they bought? The $40 bottles. Why? Because there was a lot. You probably do that without realizing it. When you go into Walmart and you see this big stack of product in the middle of the aisle and there's a lot of it, you want to buy it. When you see one thing on the shelf, you don't want to buy it. That's actually happening to you and you probably don't realize it. And so there's a lot of, I'm not saying I don't think that's wrong for Walmart to do that. It's just, there's things that go into advertising. There's things they use to make you spend money. They use fear. They use the need to belong, pleasure, humor, scarcity. We only have a few left. There's all kinds of tactics that are used in order to make you feel discontent, that I need this and I have to have it. And I know they succeed with me sometimes. There's things that we don't even realize we're being manipulated by. So just be careful with that. One more comment. Yes, I do drive. I have a Limited and a Lariat. I have, my business truck is a Lariat. Like I said, it is just personal for me. My brother has a Platinum. I have no problem with that. All I'm saying with these examples is that we have to wrestle with where we are personally. And there's just, we have to draw lines for ourselves and not where other people are at. Okay. On the study paper there, there's a story. And I want you all to be the financial advisors for this couple. This young couple is married a year. And the honeymoon phase is over. The bills are coming due. And I want you to analyze their situation and try to get them some help. So you are dismissed. I'll be